Welcome, everybody. It is PMP Weekly episode 131. It is the second of the last before we go to a summer break. Is that the right way of saying that? I have no idea. One more, and then we'll have summer break because the Northern Hemisphere is having summer and we'll have some family time off. Already thinking that too much. But anyway, so in PMP Weekly, we'll talk about the latest on Microsoft 365 platform from a platform perspective and also other areas as well. So latest news from Microsoft and community. And typically, we do have a visitor. But before we go there, Waldeck, quick intros on your side. I didn't introduce myself. See, my name is Esan. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform side. And well, the cure turn. We just can't get, by the way, get this right. It never works.
eventually, right?
Yeah.
I think we will probably need like another episode, like 100 episodes to get it right.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, my name is Valik Mostigas and I'm Cloud Developer Advocate for Microsoft 365. And today with us from the US, we have Mr. Zhenya Savchenko. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Great to be here.
Good morning. Zhenya, so let's jump right into it. Who are you? What do you do? Why are you in this show?
Yeah.
Because we invited you.
We invited him. What kind of question is that?
Yes.
I'm a PM. I look at the team's developer experience end to end. I work out of our division we call Developer Division, where we take care of all of our developer tools like VS Code and all our languages and compilers. So yeah, kind of that's what I do.
So let's actually drill on that one slightly because there was some changes related on this. So first of all, the Teams Toolkit version 2.2 is now in preview. Congratulations on that. Really cool announcement in build. It looks really, really good. So awesome work on that. Now, you said, just to recap on that, you're from the developer division, which means that you're from the Visual Studio organization. And mm-hmm. The Teams Toolkit used to be done by the Teams and Microsoft 365 organization. There was a change, right? Can you talk about that one slightly?
Yeah, sure. I guess it represents an investment across Microsoft that we're all kind of orienting towards this new hybrid workplace environment we're in. Teams has been the center of that. So it represents a larger investment into developers, you know, helping them bring more stuff into Teams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, since you are from the organization which creates the developer tools by default anyway, so it's connections and you have the skills and knowledge and everything else. And so,
let's hope so. And
no pressure. So when was this work started? So just out of curiosity for the audience.
Oh boy. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but about nine or 10 months ago.
Yeah. And basically taking over the what was then the Toolkit V1 and then moving that to be on the new work. And of course there's probably a gajillion ideas and ways to improve what we have now in preview. But before we actually talk about the future of that one, can you talk about your history? So how did you end up in Microsoft?
Myself personally, yeah,
yes.
Sure. So I was kind of, you know, it's funny, I started my career at Microsoft about, let's say, 11 years ago or so. I was a PM intern a couple times in college. And then after that, I promptly went to go start my own companies and worked in the Silicon Valley after that for, you know, it was all a bunch of different startups all over. The last thing I did before I returned to Microsoft, I was an engineering lead at Apollo GraphQL, where I helped them deliver their commercial SaaS services in the GraphQL space. For those who don't know, that used to be Apollo was a pivot from Meteor. So, you know, I joined Meteor JS. And so, yeah, I spent quite a bit of time working on developer tooling for the web. And then Microsoft for the last, 3 years now it has been, yeah.
So when you joined the Microsoft, what was the areas which you worked on first, just out of curiosity? If you can talk about that.
I can.
If it's not secret.
Yeah, it's actually quite a funny story because I had originally planned to join the web platform team, but, you know, the reorgs happen and things. So I ended up working on Windows for a while. I spent a year looking after the Windows mouse pointer, of all things. So that was a lot of fun. I got to learn a lot of stuff. And now 2 years in DevDiv.
Yeah. So I can imagine that was a first kind of a disappointment, you're joining Microsoft and then as a web stack person and heading to the web and then you'll be doing Windows. Was that a disappointment?
No, of course not. I mean, it's it's the world's biggest, I mean, of course, disappointment in the sense that it's a different role, but I learned a great deal. It was a lot of fun to kind of, you know, it's almost history more than anything to me because, you know, Windows is what I grew up with. You know, I was a Windows developer before .NET came out, and then I was a .NET developer and a Silverlight developer, and all that happened before I became a web developer. So seeing it from the inside was tremendous. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. But it's also an interesting thing, right? Because at some point you mentioned that you worked in the Valley, and I guess like that oftentimes folks will get assumption that, but it's all, I don't know, Mac and Rust and Go and Python and whatnot, like everything except Windows and .NET, right?
Yeah, totally. I wasn't expecting to make the transition so dramatically, but yeah, that was for the first time having to use Windows in a very long time. Certainly interesting.
That's actually the, it really is interesting background as well, because I think a lot of the audience of this podcast also knows that there's every now and then there's a big push for Microsoft to bet then on the Valley and trying to get the Microsoft tooling and all of that web stack tooling. And we've been done actually a really good job in some of the technologies already and focusing on supporting Node.js and all of that stuff, which is what the people in Valley are doing. Any learnings from your side? What should Microsoft do better? Or are we already doing it and people are not just catching? Or is it something what we're in progress of pushing?
I think speaking about Teams development, but you know, also just broader, you know, building apps for the Microsoft ecosystem isn't the most trivial thing. I think that we hear a lot about the configuration burden. We hear a lot about the cognitive burden. There's a lot to do. Like I don't think we're anywhere close to where I would like us to be, especially with, for example, Teams Toolkit. We're cautiously releasing and calling it a preview. We've done a lot since Toolkit V1, you know, but there's still a lot to do. I think the biggest challenge is just getting set up with a proof of concept that has, you know, basic authentication and some access to storage if you're trying to build an app is a little more challenging than it should be. And I, you know, having come from Meteor.js, especially if you're familiar with the developer experience of what that's like, you know, there's room. There's room to make it a lot simpler. So we've started. We've automated a lot of things to do with your SSO setup, your AAD setup. We tried to get you as quickly to your F5 as we could. There's still more to do.
And what was your biggest eye-opener, like coming from Windows background and web dev background to M365 development? Like, what was your biggest eye-opener, like aha moment, seeing how apps on M3.5 look like?
Or are you still kind of adapting that, this kind of a moment? I'm still in the progress of dealing with that. This is such a different world.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot more in graph than people realize. I think to me it was like, wow, we have this really important asset for developers. Yeah, it's a tremendous... I don't think there's another platform out there where you can build a business app and understand how frequently I've opened a particular doc or who are my closest, you know, relationships or how do you bridge the overlap between my schedule and like the documents I work on. And it's all in the kind of, it's all in the weeds of having to connect all these pieces together. For example, you can really get a lot of insight, I'm sure, from connecting that with some kind of machine learning stuff you can get from Azure. I just don't know that too many folks end up getting that far because there's just so much cognitive burden to go through to hook it all together. But hopefully that's what we're trying to help simplify.
Any other learnings related on coming from the Valley and then from the dev division? Obviously, Graph is a, like you said, Graph is an absolutely brilliant example of the abstraction layer, which we in the Microsoft 365 provide for the businesses and applications and partners to take advantage. Something, is there kind of a clear things which would be missing, or you would be like, well, why is this so hard, or just, oh, I wasn't aware of that thing. Anything else that comes to mind?
Let's see. Well, you know, it's also the web, especially in Teams. And so, you know, sometimes we don't get enough, I feel like, out of it, because it's, you know, it turns out you can just pin a website into your Teams. And if it knows what it's doing, you can get that benefit. For example, we love the Mural app. We love collaborating over a real-time canvas that can live right inside, your Teams. So, yeah, I don't know if... I'm not sure if I'm answering your question now, to be honest.
No. It's kind of ideas and perceptions on your side of where we should be improving also as a in the Microsoft 365, because you're kind of you're working with us, but you're still in a different organization and coming from a different background, like specific areas which are missing. That implies that we should be doing a better job on just telling the basic story in a website directly in Teams and can take advantage then on the Graph and everything else.
You know why I didn't mention this is because I guess I'm kind of used to the web being what it is in terms of developer experience. It's you know, the Node NPM stack of things is much more, let's say, skunk works and much more ad hoc than kind of how we in the enterprise used to be, you know, used to being treated by Microsoft. Yep. You know, with the visual, like back in the day, you have a very integrated tool chain on Windows. And that made you very happy. Today, you know, the number of devices you have to target, the number of platforms you have to target, and the technologies and, you know, with which you do that is they're totally different. They're inclusive of all the old stuff, but also so much more new stuff. I guess I'm just very used to that coming from the web. But I imagine for anyone who's coming to the ecosystem to build apps for M365, now that everything's closer to the web, just the fact that there are so many things to learn and so many linear things to add together kind of by yourself, I think that's a shocker.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're trying to work on.
Yeah, make it simpler. Now I'm actually going to put you on the spot. That reminded me, I'm sorry. Sorry, Zenia, on this one. But what if you would have 5 billion and you'd be basically being told that you need to fix the Microsoft 365 partner adaption? What would be the let's say top three things where you would be focusing on?
5 billion what?
dollars
people.
Good question, actually. That was really good. Keep me specifics, actual facts.
can I fix things with pure dollars? I think I need engineers, right? Like I think we need authentication, right? Like identity. That needs to be simpler. Configuration is like the bane of our existence as developers, right? We're always connecting and gluing things and managing all these. I think somewhere between those two things, I don't know what the third one would be, but because I know those two are very important. I would like to see us continue making it simpler to at least demonstrate proofs of concept with M365. Beyond that, it's hard to say. I think those are the big two rocks.
Fair point. And that's actually something what we hear with partners as well all the time. And I know, of course, that there's a lot of investments being done on those areas. And so we'll get better and better for sure. So it's just I think one of the not taking away the burden what we have for developers on this, but which we absolutely need to be simplifying. But one of the key challenges, obviously, is that we're talking about enterprise security and compliance. So it's slightly different than person signing into a random website using a user ID and a password. So there's a lot of complexity on that. But still, regardless, it's not an excuse to make it hard. We should be able to abstract the complexity out of it. So.
You know, that would be my third thing, I think, is, and this is where Teams Toolkit will go eventually, meaning we're marching on it now, and eventually you'll see the product come out. But what we've done with Toolkit V2 is really work on that proof of concept stage. We needed some way to get to market, so we had to reduce the scope dramatically. But the really important vision for this is an enterprise should be able to turn to this thing and trust that it's compliant and secure by default and kind of behaves the way they expect. And you're absolutely right. The requirements in an enterprise are vastly more complex sometimes than they are just on the web building for consumer. So that would be the third. I would say let's have a tool stack that gives you governance, you know, observability, all of the things that the enterprise would care about when they have a production concern that's full of liability and mission critical. It can't just be create React app by itself, right? We need a few more things. So that's where we want to go.
Yeah, really good. I'll see what I can do with that $5 billion. So if I can get it to you, so
that sounds great.
I'll just chat to-do, with some
write
of my
a
friends.
Check. So
exactly. Let me add it to my to-do list.
Send to NFTs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, the exchange rate between dollar and euros is pretty different nowadays. So maybe never mind. Cool. Now we talked about the Teams Toolkit already. Can you kind of a recap what's as part of the Teams Toolkit V2 preview, and then we can talk about the future side of it. But what are the key areas and improvements version comparing to the version 1.0?
Yeah, totally. So 1.0 came out last year as kind of more of an experiment. We were trying to, again, make it easier to at least scaffold applications out of Visual Studio Code, for example, towards the extensibility surfaces of Teams. The gap we saw was that there's still quite a bit of manual labor, I guess, is what we say, developer mouse clicks that have to happen inside Azure Blades or inside AAD portals. And so we wanted to add enough automation to kind of help make some of these things go away, because we felt like it was all kind of undifferentiated kind of work that you typically don't have to be too concerned about until you really get in the weeds with your thing. So the key features we've added were hosting. When you scaffold your app with the toolkit, it now comes kind of pre-configured and ready to deploy to Azure. You may not want to do that. You might be an AWS person. That's totally, totally cool. But the other piece is setting up your SSO and your auth. So that means configuring your AAD app registration. You no longer have to do that manually, nor even really think about it. If you open a new app or create a new app with the toolkit, you can just hit F5 immediately. And we do the necessary steps to get your, we just need your credentials to your tenant, your where you want to sign in. And if you want to deploy anything later, we can take your Azure subscription too. After that, we try to get you to the F5 as quickly as we can. So you can start running your Teams app directly in Teams. And it's already got SSO built in. We've added a few more goodies, like if you want to, We know developers love integrating, you know, the business value from their app comes from the data that they have access to. So we helped you integrate Microsoft Graph, and we helped you integrate simple data storage either through that or through Azure SQL. So there's a small handful of features, the config, the auth, SSO, Microsoft Graph, and Azure SQL are like the pieces that we think by default should be really easy to get started with. We're not ready for you to use this in production. You'll probably take a look and say, oh, there's a few more things I need to go to production. We're aware. That's certainly where we're going next. The impact we've made so far is to help you make proofs of concept and help you get started demonstrating what you want to do with Teams as quickly as possible.
Yep. Yeah. Which is a really good, because then you can build those minimal viable products and proof of concepts and test out the things and get the innovation ongoing rather than spending time on solving the access tokens and all of that stuff, which quite often is painful.
So. Yeah. Everyone loves it, right?
Yeah. Partners projects start there. You know, if you're a consultant or if you're an enterprise developer, you can't really get past the funding gate until you show something like a demo. And we felt it was a shame that you had to do so many manual steps just to get to a quick, just to get prototyping. So that's kind of where we are.
Now, I have to ask, because I also, if I put my ODSB engineering hat on, there was also something related on SharePoint framework in the latest version of Teams Toolkit.
Yeah, so, I failed to mention, sorry.
No worries.
We integrate with SPFX. If you're a SharePoint developer and you like the SharePoint framework, of course, SharePoint framework is already really good at solving some of these. You know, it's really good at doing auth and it's really good at hosting. Those are the key features of SPFX. But it wouldn't be a complete kind of integrated platform if we didn't bring along developers who care about that. For example, if you would like to run an Azure function alongside your SPFX solution, the easiest way to do that is from Teams Toolkit. Shameless plug.
There you go.
so we help you kind of put together pieces of Azure along with your SPFX solution with the toolkit.
Yep. Which is certainly a quite normal scenario for sure. So accessing business data from the Azure, unless you can get access on all of the data that you need from Graph, but that's a separate discussion. Quite often, that's not the case.
But I guess even then, right? I mean, even then, it sounds simple, right? Like you will spin up a function and call it. But then if you think about it, like everything that goes into it, well, you need to have SPFX, you need to have function, you need to have auth. There you go. Maybe you need to do another auth from function to, for example, Graph. Like, it doesn't just work. Like, you need to do something about it, right? And these are all the different connection points that Toolkit simplifies, right?
Precisely. It's all configuration at the end of the day. And we kind of know what the developer wants to do already. Why should we make you do it manually every time? So we kind of tried to hook it up for you.
Really cool. Now, should we jump for a moment to the articles and then we'll come back on the discussion so we don't run out of time, because we do have a hard stop on the hour. So let's do a quick scan on the articles and talk about where you can actually find Teams Toolkit as well. So just learning to speak. It's okay. Maybe in my 13th year in Microsoft, I will finally learn how to speak English. Let's see. Clearly, it's not happening on the 15th. Some of the news from the
new course available. Don't worry about it.
Yes. It's the Finglish to English training course. Anyway, so in my LinkedIn profile, I have Finnish, English, and Finglish. So
let me actually endorse you for Finglish.
Yes, please do. Anyway, so bad jokes, but it is actually there just for the smiles, because everything doesn't have to be too official. Anyway, so a few news articles from the Microsoft side. So what's new on the Teams phones? So a lot of improvements coming on the devices as well, and the Teams mobile clients. So a lot of investments on this side as well. Because Teams is not just about the web client or the desktop client. So latest news on that one. There was a reconnect and have a hybrid coffee break with Starbucks and Microsoft Teams. I didn't have a time to actually check out what was this all about, but this one's basically encouraging people to communicate and have a chat together and reconnecting after the remote work. Wasn't that the case? Did you have a chance to check it out?
Correct. Yeah, so I think the idea is that in location where you have a shop of this brand around you, like you can have a voucher or give somebody a voucher and then meet together for a coffee. I think that is the point.
Yeah. We have Starbucks coffee shops in Helsinki Airport, but only on the international side. So that gets slightly difficult.
Now, also, if you will give me one, I will take an airplane, come to your airport, we'll have a coffee, and we'll get back.
Well, that's good. Yes, that's really good. So you can fly from Schiphol, what's it?
Yes.
Anyway, I'm not going to say that again. I'm going to say it in the wrong way. Now, introducing Microsoft Dictation for iOS. This is a new product related on dictating. And this is actually really cool if you think about the amount of stuff. Well, if you think about doctors and all of that stuff, they need to do dictating a lot. And so a new product available in the Microsoft 365 areas. So Dictate for Microsoft 365. Now, moving on to the developer side of the house, Microsoft MailTube, Mailback, Microsoft Mailback, a deeper look into the Microsoft PowerShell SDK. So this one released on a week ago as well, so slightly more detailed on how the Microsoft PowerShell actually works, or the Craft, what is it, Microsoft PowerShell SDK. Because it's not really directly the Microsoft commandlets, but we call it as SDK. It's slightly confusing. It's a set of commands anyway.
Exactly, but I mean, it's commandless that you would build, that you would use to build commandless, in other words, right? Because it's the Graph API projected to PowerShell.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, absolutely. And this one's looking through the different options and different how they work in a slightly more detailed way, done by Matt Cross, a customer engineer. They used to be PFEs, now they're customer engineers. Now, Teams Toolkit on preview. So basically, what was the AKMS address? So I will get it right. AKMS Teams Toolkit?
Dash Toolkit, yeah.
That's easy enough. So well, people can actually remember that. And this is where you actually then acquire that. What's the relationship between this one and then the Visual Studio IDE Toolkit? Is it the same thing? How is it actually being? They're kind of siblings.
Yeah, siblings, right? We kind of refer to our whole offering as a toolkit across the framework that we have that's new, called Teams Framework, that helps you do some of the auth simplifications. This particular page, normally you would end up reaching this through Visual Studio Code in the Extensions tab and install that. And on our docs, we have instructions how to install an equivalent thing for your Visual Studio. So you can... Yeah. That's the other new thing. You can now build, you could always build Blazor apps and target Teams, but our toolkit helps you do that simpler.
Yeah, I saw the announcement actually, which we don't have as a blog post open in a tab. We missed it. It was an announcement from last week, so we should have actually had that. Well, Dick, can you search
on
for
it? On it.
Excellent. But yeah, so you can really easily get the extension installed on the Visual Studio Toolkit. Obviously, I've done that already because we've done some testing at some point. But then it gets to be on the left side and you can just easily start creating new solutions and to connect to the Azure, connect to the M365 tenant, and you can start creating stuff. I might be using a pre-public version, which is not starting properly, so I'm going to actually close that one. That's not a good demo. Let me double check that one before my demo on Thursday on the SPFX call on that one. But Xenia, you're doing a live demo on getting started on the next Microsoft Teams monthly community call, which happens on the same day as this is going live.
Mm-hmm.
Just reminding you on that. So.
Great. I look forward to it.
Yes. Cool. Moving on the articles. So we had a monthly summary on the Microsoft 365 BMP community. So basically a summary on what has happened across the all of the YouTube channels, what we have, all of the developer blog posts, official blog posts, community blog posts, all of the different things, what's happening around Microsoft 365 development, and all of the latest news and articles as well. So basically all of the SPF example, all of the team samples, which community has contributed a lot of contributions throughout the month again. There's new stuff, like we just established the new Microsoft 365 script samples gallery as well, which is really, really cool. Wal Palak is leading that, super cool stuff. And then, of course, one of the key point of this summary is that we call out all of the community members who've contributed within the past month, just to make sure that we mention, and typically we don't miss that many people, and also the companies which have given us their permission to actually promote them as the advocates for open source in Microsoft, which is really, really cool. So that's that article. Now, how do you use Fluent UI React Persona Control in SPFX from Zandani? She's been really pushing a lot of blog posts, which is great, in the Microsoft 365 BMP blog. And this is a story related on using the Fluent UI React Persona Controls in SPFX. So how to get started, how do you install, what are the packages, how do you get use them? And she's using the BMP JS as well to make it super easy to access the APIs. Now, what kind of apps do you can build in Microsoft 365? Waldeck, what is this all about? It's pretty descriptive title.
Well, exactly. I mean, it tells you exactly that, right? So oftentimes we come across people who are unaware of that, right? So when they think of M365, they see it as a collection of apps that they can use, like Outlook, Word, Teams, and whatnot. But they aren't aware of it, that it's a platform for which they can build apps. And then immediately they ask, okay, but what types of apps can I build? Well, this article is meant to give you that overview, right? So basically, I split between two types of apps. You can build extensions and apps that read the data from 365, and then further split into more granular differences as to where you can show these extensions, where they surface in 365, and also the different types of apps you can build that pull in the data.
Yep, really good. Just educating, this comes back on the discussion which we just had during this call. We just need to educate on the opportunities in the Microsoft 365. So there are certain products which have existed for a long time and people know that how to can extend them. And then there's newer product which we still need to continue this education. So use BMP PowerShell to add document library web part to a page. So basically adding a SPFX web part to a modern page from Martin Somers. So how would that work using the BMP PowerShell? So BMP provides the APIs, not official APIs because they don't exist, but the community provided APIs for modern pages manipulation and also the BMP PowerShell options for that. So really cool as well. Now, this is, again, Waldeck from you, so you can explain what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. So I think there are two articles, and if we show them the other way around, they'll make a little more sense.
Sure, let's do that. So let's start from this one.
Right, yes, exactly. So when you use the Microsoft Graph Toolkit, it gives you the awesome ability to put a single line of HTML on your app, and that HTML tag will retrieve permissions that it needs to get the data that it's meant to do. So for example, imagine that in your app, you want to show your upcoming events. With MGT, that is just a single line of HTML, and it does exactly that, right? So it's exactly a snippet you see now on the screen, that with that one thing, it will connect to Microsoft Graph, retrieve the data, and show it in your app, and also do the authentication, right? The trick is, though, that depending on which pieces from MGT you use, you will require different permissions to Microsoft Graph, because Agenda requires different access than your emails, than your files. So if you use all these three components or more in your app, the user will see what? A prompt after prompt after prompt. And that's not a great experience. So you want to avoid it. And you can do it by requesting upfront permissions that you need in your app at once, as opposed to having them spread over multiple prompts. And that's exactly the next article goes into the question, okay, so how do I know which permissions I need?
Yes. And that explains it in more depth. That was an older article already, but it's a good trick.
Exactly.
Super, super important article. Exactly. And this one then goes to how would I solve the needed permissions? How would I? What's the too long didn't read summary?
Yeah, so too long didn't read. The best way to do it is to use our docs, because we recently updated them. And for each part of MGT, we explain exactly, if you set agenda to only show upcoming events or to show this events, you will need that. If you want agenda to do this, you will need that. So we make it really clear based on the different options that you can set on MGT, which permissions you will need. And then taking the whole list, you can just put it at once in your app and you will be done, which is better than trying to foolproof or try to go to UI and scrap the things from URL.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Cool summary. Really good. Moving on to things, Mikael Svensson had a new article, updated script to re-index user profiles for search. Mikael's from the Microsoft, FAST organization, but Microsoft Search organization. And basically, this is a good script on re-indexing a user profile, so making sure that the SharePoint Online is kind of resetting and re-indexing that information. If you are, for example, importing business data to the user profile centers, that's quite often things what you want to happen. Now, Peter Venstra had a blog post related on getting started with child flows in Power Automate. So how do we actually fire child flows as part of the larger flow in Power Automate? So here we are creating then the child flow, and then we are basically running the child flow inside of a parent flow. And that's actually gets really, really, well, it's still no code or low code, but can get complicated when it's flow in the UX. But again, a lot of flexibility in the automation for sure. Cameron Troyer had a simplified taking meeting notes using native OneNote Outlook integration. So basically, it's just pinpointing that there are cool operations, cool functionalities, and extensions available natively in Outlook, getting them in the meeting notes. Not a technical blog post as such, but this is actually a really good reminder on the basic functionalities and features which are available. I use OneNote all the time. Sergey Sergeyevich from Mustak. How to call REST API with application permissions from Azure Logic App with Azure Key Vault and Manage Identity. Really, really important thing to get your stuff secured properly in the Azure and then accessing that information off. And then I think Sergey is always explaining this really, really carefully and really well. So good summary on how to get started and how to access that information then in a secured way. So really, really cool. Yeah. Latest Microsoft 365 developer podcast had a discussion related on Azure Event Hub reach notifications with Ike Buss, Ike is a colleague of Valdec. So good to get that discussion together with Paul and Jeremy. So a lot of news from that side as well. There was also a new version of the H2O, which is the HTML and CSS version of the Fluid framework. So it doesn't require React, doesn't require any of the components. It's just styling an open source version out of that. Now, there was a article from Gaurav Goyal related on export-import from Excel file to SharePoint. And are we importing the information? I think we are importing information directly. So there's a web part available where you can actually upload the information and that then extracts the information to a SharePoint list. That's actually really cool. PMP.js had a new version last Friday as well. So I think Julie is now leading this effort from a Sympraxis consulting side. So a lot of new stuff and improvements there as well. We had a cool article from migrating files and folders to SharePoint Online using Microsoft 365 CLI from Dipen Shah. Why would you use CLI for migrating files and folders?
Because you can, because not everybody lives in PowerShell, because that's CLI true. Runs in any shell and platform.
Yes, that is true as well. And it's actually quite a performant way of doing this. So it is just one operation. So good way of doing that. Now, April had a new video related on Power Apps profile and profile plus templates. So basically, Dataverse from Microsoft Teams profile plus Power Apps template. So good 15-minute clarification on things. And I really, 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 really like how she's doing this, basically table of content on all of the videos. It's just a timing issue or timing challenge for sure. Paolo had a cool video related to Microsoft Graph Toolkit file and file list components. Those were part of the 2.2 release of Microsoft Graph Toolkit, which was announced in Build. And basically, he walks through how they work and how you can access the information. And I think we have a good demo how to get the stuff as well. And then as a final thing from Daryl and Daniel, a good summary related on the new announcements at Edit SharePoint Patreon news post in Microsoft Teams. So we're basically heading to this direction where the SharePoint is truly the content management server in the Teams. So, and also the cloud application platform option if you use the SharePoint framework as your development platform. But this is basically then, we did not allow you to edit the SharePoint page inside of the Teams previously, but that's all of this is now getting more better and better and integrated as a one unified experience. Now that Jeff Tepper owns both Teams and SharePoint and OneDrive, or all of the three, I think this is a natural direction where we're heading. Now we have 4 minutes, so let's talk about what's going to happen this week. Anything interesting? What's happening? Well, I'm going to put you spot Valdek first. What are you going to do?
Yeah, so we have just shipped a new version of CLI from Microsoft 365 with the ability to generate a SharePoint framework package for HTML snippet. So if you want to embed Bitmaps in your page, In the past, you would just grab that, put it on a page. We don't offer that ability anymore in modern sites. So now, as a way to do it, we say, you know what? Ideally, we want you to put that snippet into a package and give it to your admin so that they can deploy it to your tenant. But that would typically require you to do what? Install Yeoman, install all the tooling, fiddle with TypeScript, build the project. Like if you are not a developer, that is already a complicated story. So we said, what if we can give you one command in CLI that you can run, and then you will get a package, and that thing just works. So we shipped it just today, like hour ago. So with that, we would very much appreciate feedback saying, does it anything work for you? Do we miss anything? Is there anything for us to improve?
We should schedule that for the community call in the upcoming weeks, absolutely, in the SharePoint framework one. So I'll follow up on that one tomorrow. Zenia, anything interesting on your table?
I mean, it's hard to say that we'll be releasing anything so close to another release we just did last week. But, we're hot on the trail for all the things we know we need to do. We're running towards making this toolkit the compliant enterprise app template for large folks who want compliance and things like that. Graph toolkit, for example, the Fluent framework need better integration. All kinds of things to connect further into the toolkit.
Cool. And on our side, there's a lot of community engagement and work across the whole platform. But then specifically, if I put my SPFX PM hat on, there's a 1.13 release is coming up pretty soon. So new version of SharePoint framework is coming soon to preview, so not to pre-production usage. And that will then have a public access for the Viva Connections cards. So you can actually start building native mobile experiences for teams using the SPFX. And that's actually really, really cool. So in the preview program, we've been trying to execute that as much as possible and give access to early on people and enabling things. There's only already 450 people signed up. So the overhead of this, it's kind of an interesting challenge when it's super successful preview program, and there's a massive overhead of then managing the access, because you don't want to say, well, now there's too many people, I'm going to decline, because that will cause then a negative perception on the whole thing. So I think this morning I was checking the registration numbers. It's 450 already registered for the preview, which is getting slightly out of control. But then again, it's pretty highly used platform, so it's good to see that there's high interest on that.
Are you bragging or complaining? I think there's
both.
Good question. Both.
Yes. It's a good problem.
It's a positive problem. So yeah.
Nice.
It's an interesting dilemma. So
there was another thing I wanted to ask. So if somebody would try Teams Toolkit V2, and if they had feedback, questions, suggestions, ideas, where would they go?
Yeah, we leave. Hopefully, we do a good job leaving our contact in the in our readmes. So there's the readme to the extension itself. There's a readme that gets dropped into your project when you create one. But honestly, I think Stack Overflow, and just tag it Teams Toolkit. We're monitoring that. Also, our teams of, there's a GitHub repo where the extension lives. You can reach that through links through those readmes. Issues to that repo, we love them. We respond pretty quickly. Those two places are probably the quickest for us to look.
Well, cool.
Excellent. Really awesome discussion. Thank you, Zenia, for joining us. Really, really great.
Likewise.
It's good to get a recap and discussion from your perspective, how things are working and what works and what doesn't. And we'll get you back here whenever stuff is getting GA'd or whenever there's a V3, because it's good to have a discussion. So
yes, thank you so much.
But thanks everybody for watching and listening. And we'll still come back for one more BMP Weekly, and then we'll go for a summer break. Nothing happens in July, so pretty much. Right, Waldeck? Actually, yes. You will be working till July.
Yes, exactly. So a little will happen. A little.
Yes. Yes, I will be on a family vacation, proper European family vacation on July, pretty much. So we're going to do a break on this. But anyway, thank you, Zenia. And we'll be back with a new one within a week. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.